What's up, everybody? Hope everyone's having a great day, great week, whenever y'all are tuning in, whether live or on demand. This is RBLR Bulls. I am Carter Brantley, one of your co-hosts. I am joined here today by Mr. Jonathan Shields. How are you doing today, my friend?
I am fantastic. It is good to be back. And there's still, we were just talking before we went live, even though we're approaching the dead part of USF athletics and stuff, there's still a ton of stuff to talk about in the broad scale of sports. And before you know it, football training camp and all that stuff is going to be starting. So I'm excited to get into it.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, I mean, we've still got we haven't had you on the show since they've really finalized the overall final recruiting class for men's basketball. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. The baseball season came to a pretty bitter end. It was unfortunate. So we'll get into that as well. Softball team had a great showing in the regional tournament. They unfortunately got knocked out, but we'll get into that. And then we'll finish it off with some track and field highlights as well. Because even though Mr. Musab Tariq is not here to break down track and field, we still got to talk about it. But we'll also touch on some broader, college topics as well, or college athletics topics rather, because, man, it's kind of a mess right now. And they're going through a lot of changes, some good, some bad, some I don't know. So we'll get into all that. But first, I did want to start with the men's basketball recruiting class, because Mr. Johnny, man, you're the guy with men's basketball on this show. So I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Did you maybe have a favorite recruit from this class, a guy that really stood out and you said, oh, man, this guy could really be good for the Bulls, or any other thoughts you might have on this final recruiting class?
Yeah, there's a few things. First, when we updated our sheet, that Ref Stevenson from DePaul, DePaul was the first opponent that we ever played when I was in college.
Really?
We went and played DePaul my freshman year. We beat them by 1 point. But DePaul, by the way, is a great Division III program. They're one of the better Division III programs in the country. So I just thought that was funny when I was reading that through. So we did win. And the NCAC, where they're at, is also a pretty good conference as well. We were in the NAC, the NACC, way back when. But yeah, the fact that that Mac was able to, first of all, get a few of his guys, which was always important. And then, because there's not going to be a single player on last year's team that's going to be on this year's team. It's just the state of the world in college basketball, which sucks. It sucks, but it is what it is. I thought it was important that he still signed some high school guys, because I'm still under the impression that that's how you really have to win. So, look at the teams that were in the Final Four last year, right? You had UConn, who Alex Carabran, their best player, was a four-year guy. Ray Mullins was a guy that they recruited. You just go down their roster. Yes, they sprinkled in transfers, but a majority of the guys were recruited.
The foundation.
Look at Illinois, Keaton Wagler was a guy that Illinois recruited, right? And yes, they got Stojakovic from the portal, so you sprinkle in one of those elite guys. But it's very hard to bring in, year in, year out, 10 new guys in the portal. You can continue through. I mean, yeah, Michigan is a little bit of the outlier with that. But when you can bring in 6'9", 6'11", and 7'2", to start, and all those three front court guys are going to be lottery picks, and it's a little bit different. But still on their bench, they had two homegrown guys. Sure. And Michigan's going to have one of the best guards in the country next year. Their freshman's going to come off the bench. So, I'm not going to say these three guys are going to be pillars of USF's whatever, but retention is the biggest thing in college basketball. And right away, I looked for, okay, how many kind of multi-year guys was he going to be able to get? And look, you got to balance that out with trying to get guys that can win now, and some of those guys are seniors, but having a good core of what they got, five or six guys that have the potential, maybe more, to be retained next year. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of things I look at. And look, I mean, they get AJ Dantzler, who's a guy that we've talked about already. Mm-hmm. I think the American is going to have a bounce back as a whole in basketball this year. Memphis has to win next year or else Penny's going to get fired. State has been sneaky, kind of putting together a pretty good class as well. FAU has more resources than most kind of mid-major teams as well. Right. So they did well. I mean, they did well. But again, it's going to be really tough to completely rebuild, because there's basically no one in the program that was a part of the tournament team last year.
Right.
But it's just the reality of sports. But I mean, considering what Mac was kind of handed, I think he did a pretty admirable job.
Yeah, man, and I think the big takeaway from this, from my perspective at least, was like I don't know that a realistic expectation. But then again, I thought this last year, and they obviously proved me wrong. I don't know that a realistic expectation for a first year coach, even at a school with pretty good resources for their conference. I don't know if USF is going to repeat next year in the American Conference, just because it's difficult to do when you have such a massive overturn in their roster. Like last year, they had CJ Brown at least coming back, and that was huge for them because CJ Brown obviously was the floor general, the point guard, the leader. They don't have that, you know, they don't have anyone coming back. So it is kind of tough to just have a complete overhaul, like you said, the three high school signees in addition to the 12 transfer portal additions. That's just, you know, that's going to be tough. But luckily, the average transfer rating of 89, that ranked third among all group of six programs. So that was really nice. And they also cracked the top 10 nationally among group of six schools per 24/7 sports. So, yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. And yeah, AJ Dantzler and Sonny Wilson are definitely two really, really proven, you know, Division I college basketball players. Like they were multi-time all conference selections at their previous schools. So there's a lot to like here. They also have two massive people in Diawara, as well as Zayden High. DOR is 7 feet tall, 7'3" wingspan, and High is obviously 6'10". So, yeah, a lot to like here for sure. So, you know, we'll see how it comes together. But I also wanted to get your thoughts, Johnny, on the just the overall college basketball landscape, shall we say? Because man, LSU specifically, I mean, there are other teams doing it obviously as well, but bringing in former professionals, guys who were drafted already, it just it's real slimy, man. What are your thoughts on that? What's going on here?
So I think the fact that when you see the graphics and you see like RJ Lewis, who by the way was like the Big East Player of the Year 2 years ago, and his graphics was like St. John's, the Jazz, and the Celtics, and then
back to LSU. That's so stupid.
So, and towards that point, it's pretty disgusting, honestly, that this stuff's even considered. But if I was Will Wade, who's going to be under a ton of pressure to win right away at LSU, considering he left NC State after 1 year, I would do the same thing. I would exhaust every possible outcome. People are going to say, whatever, you got to do what's best to win. Now, none of these guys are going to be ruled eligible. There's no way RJ Lewis is going to be ruled eligible. There's no way the guard that they got from Israel is going to be ruled eligible. The guy's like 25 years old. It's not going to happen. But look, the NCAA needs clarity on this. I think they're going to get it with the 5-for-5 rule that they're going to bring in. It basically, the 5-for-5 rule is once you leave high school, you have 5 years to play college athletics. So it takes out the red shirts or whatever, because a bunch of stuff's going on. For example, with Florida, Denzel Aberdeen played 40 minutes his freshman year. In football, that would count as a red shirt, because in football, you're allowed to play 4 games and keep your eligibility. Right.
Yeah.
In basketball, it's stupid because they don't have a system for that, which is an incredibly flawed system. And with how big college basketball is now, it didn't really matter as much when college basketball wasn't as big as football. I'm not saying college basketball is as big as football now, but the revenue that's being generated through college basketball is tremendously more high than it was X amount of years ago. So now this whole thing is being brought to the forefront. So basically the 5-5 rule is you get 5 years to play. If you have an injury, a season-ending injury, that counts into your 5 years. You don't get an injury waiver. If you have two season-ending injuries, you don't magically get another year for missing that second year.
Wow.
You get 5 years to play. I think it's the way to do it, because it completely eliminates having 25-year-olds playing college basketball.
Right. Yeah.
If you're over 23 years old, you should not be playing college basketball. It is what it is. You know, now if you're 23 and you turn 24 in the season, that's fine. October, whatever, like our first day for practice was always October 15th. And you're 24 years old, you should not be able to play college basketball. Go get a job. I hate to break to you, like the dream's over.
Right.
But I think this will provide a lot of clarity to it. And a ton of stuff that's confusing is also all the Europeans coming over. And how do you determine their eligibility?
Yeah.
And there's a rumor going around that they might completely limit how many Europeans can come over, if any. And the casualties that would have, it's not going to pass, because basically every team has multiple Europeans on it.
Right.
Some that, like Illinois, have invested multi-millions of dollars into their European players.
Right.
And for example, USF has a few Europeans that would all of a sudden not be allowed to play. So, like, the NCAA is so incredibly just like, how do I put this in a PG-friendly way? They're stupid. They don't know what they're doing half the time. The fact that they're even trying to push the college football playoff to 24 teams is ridiculous. All they care about, the fact that they expanded the NCAA tournament is ridiculous. All they care about is money, and they don't care about the student athlete, and they don't care about the fan. So it's like one time when they're actually going to do a change that actually it's going to benefit the sport for the 5 for 5 rule. They immediately, they're like, no, we can't do anything good and just let it be good. Now we have to try to limit these European players from coming over. And now we got, now who knows, maybe a Baton Rouge judge is going to make RJ Lewis eligible to play. So, you know, yeah. you never know. It's just with the NCAA in the last 6 years, honestly, it's been destroying. And, you know, I don't want to get in the whole 2014 playoff because I don't even know, really know your viewpoint. On my viewpoint, the best part about college football and what makes it unique, I know obviously we're talking about football, and what makes it unique to any sport is the regular season. The best part about NCAA basketball was March Madness. And the NCAA already did something to tweak that and make the tournament bigger. So, like, yes, Auburn, who had like 14 conference losses, is now going to get into the tournament. That's awesome. Everyone just loves that, right? No one cares. And then the same thing with the 2014 playoffs. So, college sports is changed so drastically in our lifetime. And the fact that we're even talking about multi-million dollar players in college athletics is something that a few years ago, I didn't even know it's going to be possible. But yeah, in terms of the landscape of, you know, the RJ Lewis and the NCAA is doing, you know, it feels like every day we see something new with something that you wouldn't even believe was even possible to happen, you know, a few years ago.
Yeah. It's a crazy time, man. I don't even know, frankly, what to make of all of it. It's just also, it's also silly. And the incompetence of the NCAA just seems, it seems like it's nothing new. And now it's just kind of more intense and more intensified because there's just an even brighter spotlight on them. Yeah. And man, they can't seem to get anything right. I don't want to say anything, but they can't seem to get out of their own way, I guess is a better way of putting it. But yeah, man, we'll see. We'll have to keep track of this because I'm sure over the next few months, like you said, the judges are going to come in, judges with, yeah, you know, like the Trinidad Chambliss thing at Ole Miss, you know, it was kind of
which a similar. Is, by the way, which is ridiculous that he's eligible to play.
That's right. Insane. They got a favorable judge who went to Ole Miss or whatever, big Rebels fan, got some signed footballs. And you know, then he was like, okay, cool, you're good. And I'm sure the same thing will happen with LSU here because.
I can assure you that RJ Lewis is not going to be eligible to play. There's no way he's going to be eligible to play because it's the same thing that happened with Charles Bediako with Alabama. It's the same situation. Once you sign a pro contract, it's over. You can't come back.
Right.
You know, it is what it is. Once you leave school and go sign a pro, there's no coming back. RJ Lewis got told horrific information to stay in the draft. He could have came back to school when he got drafted, and he could have made $3 million in NIL. Now he's making 50 grand a year in the G League. Now he wants to come back. I don't blame him for wanting to come back, but – you know, if it is, why wouldn't USF go grab, I mean, name a G League player that was a one and done or a two and done in college and be like, hey, you still have eligibility. Why don't you come be our small forward? You know, it just becomes a very slippery slope.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We'll see how it all goes. I don't know what to make of it. It's all just so, it's all, like you said, you almost can't believe some of the stuff that's going on, but, yeah, man, it's tough to see for sure. But the baseball team got some rough news because they lost their series to Wichita State. They basically needed to win the series at least. They maybe needed to sweep to advance to the conference tournament. They did not. They lost the series to Wichita State. Heartbreaking fashion, too. They lost in extra innings to finish out their year. So it was a tough season. But shortstop Jevon Relaford, he was named Conference Defensive Player of the Year for his elite play at shortstop. He was excellent there, and he was a really big bright spot offensively. He had 337, he had 30 RBIs, 10 doubles, 3 triples. He had a home run as well to add to that. So he was really outstanding, kind of one of the few bright spots, but at the same time, when they play as poorly as they did in conference play, it's not great. Man, they got off to such a good start. There were talks of them being a top 25 team potentially, and then, man,
I mean, they were terrific in March.
Yeah, and then they started playing in conference play, and they just collapsed. So Johnny, what goes into that, man? Like, how does that happen? You know, I don't know. It's baseball, so it's a different beast. But, man, I just
– baseball's so weird. We see with the Rays right now because the Rays are freaking awesome, and there's team in the history of the world better than the Rays right now. And it's just – I don't know. Baseball is the most, like, momentum-driven sport that there is because you play every single day. You know, football, you play once a week. Basketball in college, you play 2 times a week. You know, lacrosse, you don't play every day. Baseball and softball, you play every day, and not in baseball, like you play four times a week. It's the same thing, you know. But when they went on that stretch, their losing stretch, I think it started like end of April, right? Kind of that the series with East Carolina is when it started. Yeah. That kind of put like the last kind of nail in the coffin. Once you lose all those games, it's almost like you're drowning, and when you try to come up for air, you get ripped away by a rip current. You know what I mean? It's like, no matter what you do, it feels like you can't do anything right. And by the time they steadily turned around the ship a little bit, it was too late. And, you know, and that's unfortunate because there was some real talent on this USF team. Yeah, and like, sure, it's not, we're not saying they were going to be in Omaha or anything, but no, you know, it was plenty good enough to potentially compete for their conference championship.
Yeah.
And now the fact that they didn't even make the conference tournament is
shocking.
I mean, it's pretty appalling to me, because there's no way there was, how many teams made the conference tournament? It was the top 8 or 10, probably 12, you know, whatever it is. There's no way they weren't a top one of those teams in their conference.
Yeah, it's disappointing, man, for sure. I know they, I mean, you know, we're talking about how disappointing it is. They certainly know how poorly they played, and it was really tough to see. And hopefully they're able to bounce back next season, because it was a really ugly ending, left a really bitter taste in a lot of people's mouths for this USF baseball team, unfortunately. And it was not pretty, and it was a really disappointing effort by the team. But you know, it's baseball, man. It's subject to so many random feels too dismissive, but it can be kind of subject to like you said, momentum or whatever you want to call it. Just the whims of the universe can sometimes go against you, and man, it's hard to fight back sometimes. But the baseball team just couldn't muster up enough of a fight. But luckily, the softball team, they were in the regional final.
They were awesome,
which was great. Yeah, they had an amazing season. Another Coach Erickson just cooking up another one. I mean, it's just kind of standard business operating procedure for him and this softball team. And they unfortunately lost twice to Arkansas, but and that knocked them out of the tournament in the regional final. But Arkansas, number 10 team in the country, there is no shame at all in losing to Arkansas, even though the last game was a bit of a blowout, frankly. I think they lost 10-2. But they did manage to beat Washington in between those losses, so that was great. And, man, what a season from this softball team. Some really great stuff. What can you say about, like, you know, when you're going into one of these big time tournaments, like it's, you know, end of season tournament time, and you have to play a team like Arkansas? Is there anything that you can do to kind of try to counteract the disparity in talent? Is probably maybe a little bit harsh, but at the same time, you know, it's real. But the softball team obviously wasn't able to overcome it, but is there anything that you guys tried to do during your time at your school to try to kind of close that gap a little bit, shall we say?
Yeah, it's you basically have nothing to lose when you're playing a team like that, right? Sure. God forbid, you know, when we played a few teams, like, for example, my group the last 2 years, even though I wasn't there, played NIU and as a D3 playing a D1 team.
Yeah.
And look, it counts on the schedule, but it doesn't really count, right? And we always just said, like, make it close. Because if you make it close, then all of a sudden kind of talent doesn't go out the window, but they get a little bit clenched up, because we played with no pressure in that game. You know what I mean? USF went into the Arkansas game. They had no pressure. They're playing with house money. You know, they really can't. I won't say they can't do anything wrong, because obviously your season's over if you lose. But it's national news if Arkansas loses, right? It's if USF loses, it's local news, and we talk about it on podcasts like these. So we would say our thing was like, okay, and basketball is like, keep it close till the fourth quarter, then anything can happen.
Yeah.
In softball, I don't know what the equivalent of that is. Like, keep it close the first four innings, you
sure,
know?
Yeah.
And then, but you know, in softball, you know, softball more than baseball, it's more, it's like if you have a pitcher in softball, like they can throw 180 pitches. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There's no, like they won't throw 180 pitches, but you know, it's a little bit different. But the whole thing was just like, keep it close, make them feel the pressure, and then someone's got to come up with a play. And in basketball, someone's got to hit a big shot. In softball, someone's got to get the big hit. And, you know, they did that against Washington, which was awesome.
Yeah.
But Arkansas is the number, 10 team in the country for a reason, 11 team in the country for a reason. But like you said, this was still a pretty spectacular run for USF softball. And if you were to show the new USF athletic director just what would happen in the calendar sports season for the 25-26 season, I think he would freak out a little bit, you know, in terms of, in a good way. Like, if you were to say that USF football was going to beat Boise State in Florida, like, I'm pretty sure he would do a backflip.
Right.
If you were to say that USF basketball was going to win the American and be a trendy upset pick to beat Louisville, and if they didn't shoot 3 of 30 from three, you know, maybe something else happens. And it just continues. I mean, you're going to talk about the Olympic sports in a second. A majority of the Olympic sports, USF is very much competing in.
Yeah.
So all in all, as I don't, you know, there's no more current USF sports for at least in kind of the bigger sports for the rest of this year. I mean, it was still a pretty spectacular year for USF athletics. Again, we're talking about an athletic department that how many years ago did they go not win a game in football?
Right. That was, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, that's within the last 10 years.
Right.
You know, and USF hasn't won the conference in basketball to go to March Madness in what, 15 years, I think they said, right? It might even be longer than that. So you're looking at the best athletic season USF has had in over a decade.
Yeah,
which is pretty incredible, and I give kind of our podcast all the credit for that.
That's right. We just started, and we started just in time. That's right. Yeah, man. I mean, and then the softball team they won the American Conference themselves.
Exactly.
And, unfortunately, but for them that's not necessarily as noteworthy as the other sports because they win their conference all the time.
Yeah,
so you know, but it was cool to see them, you know, go out and do their thing. Like you said, beating Washington was a big deal, and unfortunately the games against Arkansas weren't as close as they probably like. But man, Arkansas has like national championship aspirations. They're one of the best teams in the country, so that's going to happen. But it was cool to see the Wilkes sisters. They had Alex, Casey, and Jocelyn. All three of them became the first trio of sisters to play together in an NCAA regional game. I thought that was a really cool little note.
That's awesome.
I don't know if you ever had to interact with a trio of brothers or anything like that in your time. I can't say how common that is across sports, frankly, having three siblings play on the same team together, but that was pretty cool. So we'll see if the softball team is able to continue their massive run of success over Coach Erickson's entire really career. But regardless, like you said, a really tremendous season, and it was kind of a nice exclamation point for some of the major sports in terms of team sports for a great USF season. Even the lacrosse team, man, I mean, I know lacrosse, women's lacrosse is only in their second year, but they made it to their conference championship as well, and they lost a nail biter. And the fact that they were left off of the national tournament was kind of a big deal. Like, they were kind of screwed, to be quite honest. Like, they probably deserve to make it in, but regardless, you know how that goes. The NCAA, we were just talking about them, and you know, NCAA is going to NCAA. So anyways,
lacrosse is not getting the respect it deserves.
That's
but all of a sudden, within a 5-year standpoint, like, you as a diehard USF fan, if I would have told you what year did you graduate USF?
Yeah, 2020. That was my
if idea. I would have told you in 2020. Boy, that's coming on 6 years from now. That 6 years ago. Yeah, you're old.
Yeah.
But 6 years ago, that USF would be in the process of building an on-campus stadium. That's going to be just incredible.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, USF is a destination where coaches want to come to, getting coaches like Brian Hartline, which is a massive get.
Yeah.
And if I had told you that the basketball coach would have left after a year to go to go to Providence, and the guy that they got got Xavier to a one seed in the NCAA tournament, right?
Yeah,
Louisville was number one team 5-6 years ago, right? I assume you wouldn't believe me if I told you that stuff.
Right, definitely not.
Right. Yeah. So it just shows that USF in half a decade went from like a laughing stock almost to a destination. And it speaks to they had a lot of really smart people in charge that made a lot of really good hires. And now yeah, unfortunately, when they were the laughing stock is when all the conference realignment stuff happened. But now it's, you know, they're the premier kind of non-power team in the country.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And yeah, man, that's it's exciting stuff. It's an exciting time to be a USF Bulls fan across their athletic department. There's a lot of really tremendous stuff going on. But I want to finish off the show with some track and field stuff. But Jonathan, I know you got to get out of here. Appreciate you hopping on, and we'll see you next week, my friend, and we'll talk some more USF sports for sure.
So, yes, sir. It sounded like my whole monologue that went on sounded like we're going away. We're not going anywhere. We're still here.
That's right. We're still here.
Because I'm telling you now, all of a sudden it's June. I don't know about you, but May flew by. Now, oh, I mean, you really, you start to get into to lying season for football real quick. You know, right now there's a ton of probably people saying USF's going to make the playoff and all this stuff like that. So we get to get into talking season and lying season. But no, it was good to be back. I appreciate you guys. And I'll see you guys next week.
Absolutely. See you next week, my friend. All right. And so now to finish off the episode, we are going to be talking about some track and field stuff. We've got some really tremendous, tremendous happenings. You know, they went to Denton for the American Conference Outdoor Track and Field Championships this past Saturday. And Jaleel Kroll, he was the highlight. He earned 3 medals in the 4x100 meter relay, the 100 meter and the 200 meter on the final day. They were up at Norma Noble Hunt Stadium. So that was a lot of fun. And he had 2 gold medals in Saturday. So he now has 10 individual American Conference titles, the most conference championships in program history, and 3rd most in American Conference history. So Mr. Kroll, man, he is legit. Caden Broadnax, he placed 5th with a personal best time of 9.96. So shout out to him as well. And then Nathan Matilas, he captured the 400-meter title with a time of 46.02. And then Kelsey Singleton, she secured a silver medal, crossing in at 46.21 as well. Markel Jones placed 8th with a time of 47.41. So the men finished in 3rd place with 116 points, and the women's team placed 7th with 66. So what's next for the program? They are going to be sending 20 athletes to the NCAA East first rounds. It's scheduled for this next upcoming week, May 27th through 30th. They're going to be at the University of Kentucky Outdoor Track and Field Facility in Lexington, Kentucky. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And then the following bowls qualified for the East rounds. They'll compete for a chance to advance the NCAA Outdoor Championship. So basically they go from the East first round, and then they can go to the Outdoor Championships, which are going to be June 10th through 13th up in Eugene, Oregon at Hayward Field. I won't go through all the names, but some of the highlights to Devontae Archer for the men's 400-meter hurdles and the 4x400. Obviously, Jaleel Kroll is going to be there for the 100, the 200, and the 4x100. So that's kind of fun. And then Markel Jones as well, he's participating in the 4x400. So that's really fun. And some of the women that are going to be participating as well, Doris Quainu, she's going to be participating in the 100-meter hurdles. Zion Rowe, she's doing the triple jump. So that's a lot of fun. And we'll be keeping track of that as well, because the track and field, you know, they're doing a lot of great work. So we really appreciate y'all for tuning in. Hope y'all enjoyed the episode. Definitely stay tuned for everything USF athletics related, because me and my friend Jonathan, we're going to be talking about it for the rest of the offseason as well. We'll be sprinkling in some episodes here and there, because hey, even the offseason, there's still stuff to talk about, especially with the football team and the basketball team gearing them up. And we'll see what changes are in the offing. You know, there's always some staff changes and whatnot. There's already the beach volleyball coach retired, so they had to bring someone else new in. So we'll talk about that next week as well. But really appreciate y'all tuning in. Give us a like and subscribe on your way out. And give us a follow at RBLR Sports or at RBLR Bulls. We'd really appreciate it. But until next time, and as always, go Bulls.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.